It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer, a mere 2 weeks before the start of the NFL draft. We will have some draft conversations later on in this episode. We'll be going through some positions that are probably of less importance to the Ravens. We're talking quarterback, running back, wide receiver. And we will also be talking about what we learned from the Liars Luncheon when John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta met with the media, gave us a pre-draft press conference, what we learned from that. But first, Jonas, the Ravens have brought in some kick returning depth, a short king in Deonte Hardy, formerly known as Deonte Harris, kick returner, wide receiver, 5'6", but blazingly fast.
Yeah, I mean, he was available because he was released by the Bills. Not exactly the cream of the crop option, I guess I'll say. I think it's fair to assume that he is going to be the favorite to step in for Devin Duvernay, at least as a punt returner. But even then, I think it'll be an open competition. You know, we talk about just how these guys stack up efficiency-wise, punt return yardage over expectation behind Devin Duvernay. Since 2019, he's had a lot of work, but hasn't really been anything more than an average returner. Obviously, he had that all-pro season in 2019. Last year, he had a 94-yard touchdown return for the Bills, but he hasn't really been decisively better than, you know, Devin Duvernay as a punt returner or Justice Hill even as a kick returner. So I don't think this is a slam dunk sure thing that he's going to step in and be, you know, wide receiver or kick return one or punt return one. I think especially if the Ravens have Justice Hill available to do some special teams work, if they bring in a guy through the draft, maybe a, you know, one of these wide receivers that they could be looking at in the first, second or third round. Obviously we know that the kickoff return is going to be a little bit more interesting this year because of the rule changes, because John Harbaugh is going to be devoted to, you know, squeezing the most possible juice out of that fruit with everything that's now possible and the fewer touchbacks that there will be in 2024. So it's gonna be interesting. You know, he has a bit of a fumbling problem, 9 fumbles as a punt returner since 2019, the second most in the NFL in that span. So, you know, we don't know what the financials look like. We don't know, you know, how much they're committed to him in terms of the, you know, millions of dollars, but it's gonna be interesting to see just where he lands on the depth chart, at least to start training camp, because I don't think it's a sure thing that he's going to be the clear-cut favorite right there.
No, probably not. I think this is just a good depth signing for now, because it's not like they're adding a whole lot to that wide receiver room by bringing in Deonte Hardy, because he's never been a great wide receiver. You know, his best season as a receiver came back in 2021. 570 yards was that season where he had 36 catches. That was with the Saints. Last year, 15 catches, 150 yards. That being said, Duvernay, you know, wasn't doing much last year as a wide receiver. No. I know that wide receiver room was deeper. That was a deeper wide receiver room for the Ravens last year than in previous years. So they were relying on Duvernay less. But, you know, the bar for replacing Duvernay was not very high. And when Duvernay signed with the Jaguars, I still thought the Ravens should have made a signing to replace him. So it's going to be interesting to see with this new kickoff how that affects things. You know, maybe the Ravens look to the draft as a spot where the wide receiver that we think they will take in the mid, you know, second, third, fourth rounds, maybe they're looking at that guy also as a kick returner because of this, or maybe they just hand the job to Deonte Hardy, or maybe there's another move yet to come down the pike. I don't think they're going to go with Derrick Henry, though, Jonas, like you suggested a couple weeks ago, unless things get absolutely dire in a playoff game and they need some somebody to just truck over guys. All right, let's talk about what we learned when we were at one winning drive earlier in the week to listen to Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh talk about their pre-draft strategy, meetings, discussions. And to be clear, it's called Liar's Luncheon for a reason. You know, this is a luncheon where the Ravens don't want to give away a whole lot.
There was nothing that really stood out as a bold-faced headline, like nothing that was obvious as the, you know, the clear-cut talking point. I think there were points where I was left with questions because of how Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh answered. I think one of them is just this notion that this is not an especially deep draft. You know, Matt Miller from ESPN called it a fallow draft. Last year, he said it was a lot more deep. We stocked that away for 2024. 2025 could be a deeper draft. And the Ravens have 9 picks, but I think 3 of those are after pick 200. 4 of those are in the 5th round or later, I believe. So, you know, you were there, Paul. I mean, you know, Eric DaCosta talked about just the possibility of trading and trading around. And they have 9 picks this year. They're slated to get 11 next year because of the 4 compensatory picks that they're currently in line for. Is there a situation, is there a world in which they only take like 6 guys, 7 guys this year, and maybe you are looking at something like 13 next year? I mean, DaCosta's never taken more than 12 players in a draft. I think it would get really, really busy and maybe like counterproductively busy if you have that many picks in one draft. But if this is not a deep draft, if you do not like the value on the board, like past round 4, I'm curious, you know, how they're actually going to proceed with those 6 and 7 round picks, because they might not be worth more than just like the money that you spend on an undrafted rookie. But of course, you know, the other teams probably have the same valuation. So is there actually a world where you can you get actual value if you are trading those picks away and it's not just kind of giving it away for free?
Look, anything more than 10 picks in a draft, it's hard to roster all those guys. It's not like you're guaranteed to roster the 7th and 6th round picks, but even teams that are rebuilding have a hard time finding spots for that many rookies. It just requires a lot of open roster spots and a lot of competition. And the Ravens are going to have much, much more open competition this year at certain spots, I think, than in previous years. You've talked about, Jonas, the orders kind of coming from on high to play the young guys. And I think that's going to include draft picks. And that was a question that DaCosta got about, you know, is there more room for rookies to come in and compete day one than maybe last year? And he said yes. Now, the Ravens could still bring in a lot of veterans in the summer months and maybe into September like they did last year, you know, picking Kyle Van Noy off the couch back in September, finding Jadeveon Clowney back in July. You know, those kind of veteran depth signings will block the path for some rookies. But I do think that there will be some opportunities for some rookies. I just don't know if they'll have 10 spots per se where rookies can be competing for spots, you know, in the draft. By the way, Fallow was most used back in 1804, according to Google Ngram, and it is a fallow time for the word fallow, because it's not getting a whole lot of usage at the moment. This is an all-time low in 2024 for the word fallow. So good for whoever that was to bring that word back.
I'm looking at the etymology right now. It comes from the old English verb fieldgin, which means to break up land for sowing. So
I always thought, I always thought like fallow fields, like the fields themselves are not producing much crop.
Speaking of fallow, let's talk about the 2021 draft class from the Ravens. Rashad Bateman and Dafe Owe, both up for that 5th-year option. Didn't get a lot of clarity from Eric DaCosta on whether that 5th-year option will be exercised. The deadline is coming up. It is May 2nd for both those guys. Bateman, we think, Paul, probably not going to get it. It's a $14.3 million guaranteed hit.
And
if Marquise Brown is getting $7 million, $9 million, you know, with incentives, considering his, you know, track record and his availability in free agency, I don't think you want to pay Rashad Bateman that much, although I am very much a believer in the Rashad Bateman process and his potential for 2024. But I do wonder, and I do find myself curious about Adafe, and with his price tag only being $13.3 million, Za'Darius Smith got $11.5 million a year this offseason after a 5.5 sack season. Jonathan Grenard got $19 million a year at age 26, despite finishing with a pressure rate, according to PFF, on true pass rush, which is, you know, no play action, no screens, no RPOs. That was 7 percentage points lower than what Adafe put on tape last year. Bryce Huff got $17 million a year from the Eagles, despite not being anywhere close to an every down defender. He played less than 50% of the snaps with the Jets last year. So Dafe's young. You know, he just turned 25 this past December. I think he took a step forward with Chuck Smith. You know, he was always going to be a guy whose best ball was ahead of him. He hasn't really had the sack production that would make this a slam dunk. Of course, we're going to exercise the option. And I just find myself wondering if the kind of non-answer that Eric DaCosta gave us was to cover for the fact that both those guys aren't getting it, in the same way that the non-answer we got on Patrick Queen last year was a you know, polite way of saying we're not going to do it, or if it was just a cover for only one of these guys isn't going to get it, but we're not going to embarrass him by saying this guy's getting it, this guy isn't.
You know, here's an interesting thought experiment. What if Justin Madubuike were a first round pick instead of being a third round pick, and the Ravens had to decide on a fifth year option for the guy who was drafted in 2020 after his third season in which he had 5.5 sacks before he broke out for his 13 sack campaign? Would they have done that at that time if they had to pay Justin Madubuike first round money, essentially what they would be paying now Odafe Owe for next year in $13 million? Would they have done that when he had only racked up at that point 8.5 sacks in 3 seasons? Maybe. It's a good question, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's tough to put yourself in that spot because they didn't really have a lot of depth at that position going forward. But the Ravens don't have a lot of depth at outside linebacker going forward, especially right. If you are just totally confused about where, you know, David Ojabo fits long term because of his medical issues.
The point being, it's tough to make a decision on these guys after 3 years, and you don't know what that fourth year is going to bring. And we saw Justin Madubuike break out in a big way in his fourth year. That could be this season for Odafe Owe. You know, he may finally get the double-digit sacks that the Ravens thought he could get when they drafted him in the first round because, you know, he breaks out athletically, he gets more opportunities. You know, there are fewer veterans on the field. He gets more snaps. He's able to bring guys down, quarterbacks down, instead of just spinning them around in the backfield like he did a bunch of times this past year. So it's tough to make a decision on these guys. I think we'll touch on those fifth-year options more as we get closer to that deadline. But Rashad Bateman, I'm not picking up that option if I'm EDC. However, it is a very close call for Odafe Owe for me.
Yeah. Last kind of relevant quote from John Harbaugh that got my antenna up was him talking about just the prospects that are in this class and maybe how you treat them if you're the Ravens and you welcome them into your organization, especially if they're a first round pick, second round pick. He said, quote, "Sometimes you get players that are a little bit different, so you want to move your scheme that way. Sometimes you have a way you want to play. You have needs on your roster, so you move your draft a little bit that way." And that stuck out to me just because of what we've seen the past couple of years with some of these high impact round one guys. You know, you bring in Kyle Hamilton and boom, he's not just a deep safety, but he's a guy who can play as a nickelback too. You bring in Tyler Linderbaum and boom, you've got like a guy who's, right away, a fantastic, you know, zone block, center, a guy who can get out in space in the way that Jason Kelsey did in Philly for so long. You know, that changes some of the instincts for Todd Monken and how he wants to attack defenses. So I do wonder, just like, are there prospects in the Ravens range at number 30 that would necessitate a change in scheme or would encourage change in scheme that they are, you know, kind of looking forward to? Like, you know, does, if they are really into Keon Coleman, is that someone that, you know, you feel like you only want to play at that X position, so you are kind of freeing up Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers to be a little bit more pigeonholed in their roles, and you're not getting them, you know, kind of sit off to the line of scrimmage. If you're interested in Jordan Morgan, you know, the Arizona tackle who might be better served as a guard because he's not really a super physical player, does that mean also that you are going to continue to transition to more of a zone blocking scheme, which is kind of what we saw at Georgia with Todd Monken? If you're taking Chop Robinson, does that mean that you are committed to him, you know, kind of lining up in that speed edge rusher role that Jadeveon Clowney filled so often last year, where he's like the wide nine technique that you see Myles Garrett take, you see a lot of Eagles edge rushers take, where you maybe are a little bit more compromised run defense wise, but you are willing to give that up because of that burst and that acceleration and that ability to kind of, you know, turn the corner and get to the quarterback. So there are a lot of guys that we're going to be talking about, you know, in the next couple of weeks about, you know, in that range of 20 to 40 who are not only good prospects, but would probably force the Ravens' hand in terms of changing how they want to play football to get the most out of them.
That's what good coaches do, in my opinion. That's what good coaches and good coordinators do, is they adapt their schemes and their play calling to fit the talent. You have to be able to adapt and adjust. I think it's going to be interesting too, with Zach Orr taking over as defensive coordinator, how willing is he going to be to adjust the scheme? I don't know. And that's going to be a great test of his ability to scheme up a defense. And I think if Todd Monken cannot find a spot for somebody as talented as, look, I think Keon Coleman's great. I know a lot of people are less high on him, but you find the great talent and you fit the game plan around him. That being said, we've learned some things about Lamar Jackson, the type of players he likes to play with and the type of players that do well with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. It's going to be interesting. I don't know exactly who those type of players, if somebody falls into their lap that wouldn't make sense for them at all, but they say, look, the talent is too good that we can't pass it up. We'll see. I think those are questions that they have to have. And that's why there is a separation of church and state between Eric DaCosta, the front office, and the coaches, because EDC has to evaluate the talent and John Harbaugh has to say, how is this guy going to fit on our football team? And I think that's an important balance for those two to strike.
Yeah, maybe this is something we can talk about, you know, when we do our mock draft, spoiler alert, but I guess we kind of have to interrogate what is the kind of prototype receiver that Lamar actually wants.
Yes, you know? That's a great question. I don't know the answer. I don't know if we have a definitive answer yet. I don't know exactly what kind of receiver the Ravens should be looking for here. I don't know if there is one answer.
Well, we know that the most important qualification is he from South Florida? Is he from South Florida? Is he from Broward? Just imagine the love that Lamar would have for Mark Andrews if he were from Pompano Beach.
Oh, it'd be, yeah.
But unconditional love. I don't know, because like Mark Andrews is fast for the position. Isaiah Likely, not really, but both those guys are ball winners. Both those guys, you know, will give everything they can to, you know, come down with a catch. And I bring up the tight end just because I think like the prototype at wide receiver has been pretty well established, where it was Hollywood Brown, again, South Florida guy with blazing speed. Zay Flowers, South Florida guy, less blazing speed, but, you know, an ability to get open. So I don't know if, you know, he has a different preference for what he wants at receiver than right. What he wants at tight end, or what he prefers throwing to a tight end. You know, there's obviously the reporting come out of ESPN, I think last week, that, you know, Lamar or the Ravens want a X receiver, a possession type guy, which would be, you know, antithetical in a lot of ways to the kind of guys that Lamar has craved and coveted. So maybe it's him evolving as a player. Maybe it's him realizing the offense needs to evolve. But it's really tough to kind of get your hands around what exactly Lamar wants at that position, because we don't have a way of really ascertaining that.
You also can't, and I thought it was funny when Eric DaCosta mentioned that Lamar will weigh in these draft conversations. If they ask him a question, he's not shy about giving his opinion on a player. If they send him some tape and he watches them, you also though cannot fill a wide receiver room with all Zay Flowers and Hollywood Browns. That's not a recipe for success, because those guys have certain limitations. You know, they're not big, yeah. They're shifty, but they may not be able to win, you know, contested balls as much as bigger wide receivers. So you can't just fill a wide receiver room with one type of prototype. You have to have a balance. And I think we saw a little bit more balance last year between OBJ, Aguilar, and Zay. And I think the Ravens would be smart to balance that wide receiver room out a little bit more. And I don't think they're going to go after somebody who is just small and fast in this draft. Let's talk about some positions that the Ravens could target in the mid to late rounds of this draft. And we're talking about positions where the Ravens already have their starters entrenched, but they could certainly add some depth. And depth is one of the biggest reasons the 2023 Ravens got the one seed in the AFC and reached the AFC championship game. It was because of how deep they were. And so those mid to late round draft picks are going to be key for them. So we're talking about quarterback, we're talking about running back, and we're talking about tight end. We've already spent a lot of time talking about wide receivers, and we'll talk about defense, I think, next week. But these are three spots where I think the Ravens could be targeting guys in rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let's start with quarterback, Jonas. And the reason that we think the Ravens could take a quarterback here is because their quarterback room right now is Lamar Jackson, Josh Johnson, who turns 38 in about a month, and Malik Cunningham, who was a developmental prospect when the Ravens picked him up. I don't know if he's developed at all based on what we've heard from Harbaugh and DaCosta. What a great guy he is. Boy, is he swell. Can he play quarterback? That's a great question. And Harbaugh mentioned, yes, he's developing as a quarterback. He's also developing as a wide receiver. Not exactly what you want from your QB2 behind Lamar Jackson, who has had a tendency to get hurt, and those injuries have derailed seasons.
The draft has become so enamored of quarterback potential that, like, if you have any chance of being a star in this league, you're going to go in the first round or, you know, early second round, which means that all of the backups are, you know, either like coming back for another year of NIL or probably going pretty quickly in, you know, day three. And if the Ravens, do you want to take like a, you know, a fourth round pick on a quarterback? Do you want to take a fourth round pick on a, you know, a running back when you have Derrick Henry and Justice Hill and Keith Mitchell? It's just this very weird spot to be in where you have to find someone for the future, because as you mentioned, Josh Johnson is not getting any younger, but to get someone who's any good, you're going to have to spend some real draft capital at a position where, you know, it's important, but it's also not important. I don't know. It's tough to just kind of get a read on where exactly the sweet spot for the Ravens is this year, because there's just like this, there's such a trickle down effect from college football. You know, I wrote a story today on just the possibility of the Ravens trading around in day three, because I remember listening to like a draft podcast at the start of the season, and it was just teeming with like day three quarterbacks, like guys who would be in that sweet spot for the Ravens to get in, like, you know, round four, round five, round six, round seven. And seemingly all of them returned to college or transferred to a new school. So it's a real, real tough spot for the Ravens to be in, to find someone who works for them and works for the value on their big board.
The fact that the Ravens have nine picks in this draft, I think that makes it easier to swallow you taking a fifth round quarterback or a fourth round quarterback, because if you came into this draft with like five picks and you needed to get impact guys, I would be much more concerned about taking a backup quarterback with one of those picks. But they have some picks to play with here. What I will say about this quarterback class and the five quarterbacks who are viewed as like first round picks are much ballyhooed. It's also a draft class for quarterbacks where a lot of these guys are older. You know, Caleb Williams and Drake May are on the younger side, but Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, you look at some of the mid-round guys like Jordan Travis from Florida State and Joe Milton III from Tennessee. They've all played at least 5 years in college, and some of those guys are sixth-year quarterbacks. So they have a lot of experience. That's great, but they also have a lot of tread on those tires, and you wonder about how high the ceiling is for a guy that we've already seen play at the collegiate level for 5 or 6 years. How much better can they get? But there are some guys in those mid rounds. Obviously, the Ravens are not going to be in the market for Caleb Williams, for Drake May, for Jaden Daniels, for Bo Nix, for Michael Penix. I don't think that they're going to draft Spencer Rattler, another older quarterback who I saw play in person down at Texas A&M in the middle of the season. He had three intentional grounding penalties in the first half. I've never seen that before. It was remarkable. There are some other guys, though, that I think could be intriguing. Michael Pratt from Tulane, who's pretty athletic. Jordan Travis, another athletic guy, good running ability, but another older guy. Joe Milton, I just mentioned, got a massive arm. He's a big dude. These guys with theoretical upside, but then you look at how old they are, and it's like, how much upside is yet to be untapped? Because Pratt has played 4 years. You know, Travis has played 6 years. Milton has played 6 years in college. So, yeah, these athletic swings would be nice to make in round four, five, and six. But when they're 23, 24 years old, how much better are they going to get when they go up a level? Who is your guy? Do you have one guy or two that you think would make sense for the Ravens in the mid rounds?
I guess Michael Pratt, just he seems the best combination of accuracy, athleticism, production. You know, a lot of these guys, frankly, kind of plateaued in college. You know, Devin Leary at one point was like a guy who was going to be a round one or round two dude. I think he was like a tremendous sophomore season at NC State, and then just didn't really amount to anything at Kentucky besides being a, you know, pretty good quarterback. And then just, you know, the guys at the back end of this draft are probably not any more valuable than Malik Cunningham or Josh Johnson or Tyler Huntley. I mean, I think the delusion that some people might be under is that you can find a guy in round seven or in the undrafted ranks and just have him turn automatically into Tyler Huntley, and it's not going to be that easy. You know, that, yeah. I think that was the assumption that a lot of people made with Malik Cunningham. Oh, you know, it's the same kind of prototype. Let's just turn him into, you know, the next cheap backup quarterback. But if it was that simple, everyone else in the NFL would be doing that same thing.
All right, let's talk about running back. Derrick Henry was signed to a 2-year, $16 million deal that is one of those fake 2-year deals that the Ravens could get out of after 1 year. He is 30 years old. He is going to be their workhorse back this season, no question. He may be their workhorse back in 2025 as well, but that doesn't mean that they can't add to that running back room. They're going to get Keaton Mitchell back at some point over the course of the season if his rehab goes well, and they still have Justice Hill in the fold, but I think they would be wise to get some kind of insurance for Derrick Henry. It's also interesting what Eric DaCosta had to say about this draft class in particular. Because when asked about the running backs, he said, quote, "You saw 9 or 10 guys get signed on the first day of free agency," talking about the running backs. "And I think part of that was probably how people looked at this running back class in the draft. There's no like top tier first round type talent this year, but there are a lot of guys who you're looking at prospects in the second, third, fourth round. So there's a lot of guys, particularly third, fourth, fifth round clumps. So we've looked at these guys very closely. We're excited about those players. And there's probably a pretty strong chance we will draft a running back at some point." I think as many lies as we heard during the Liars Luncheon, I tend to believe this one a little bit. And I also agree with his assessment of the middle rounds of this draft in terms of running back talent, because we probably won't see a running back go in the first round of this draft and maybe not in the first 10 picks of the second round. But there are a lot of guys who are like closely bunched in the mid rounds there. I think of Trey Benson, who's a big back from Florida State, we've talked about on this podcast. Bucky Irving from Oregon, another guy that we've talked about on this podcast, kind of a small, shifty back who I like a lot. Blake Corum, who just won the national championship with Michigan. Ray Davis out of Kentucky. A lot of these guys that are very closely graded by a lot of scouts, and it's kind of take your pick. You have to pick the right one, but a lot of these guys are right in that range. And I think, you know, the Ravens could kind of shrug their shoulders with any one of these guys and say, yeah, he's worth a fourth, fifth round pick.
Yeah. Dane Brugler, draft analyst for The Athletic, put out his beast draft preview yesterday, Wednesday. And I think he had 12 guys, 12 running backs with either a third or fourth round grade, which aligns pretty well with your line of thinking there, Paul, about where the Ravens could look, what slot. Maybe this is just me being a contrarian. Maybe this is me just kind of overthinking it. But if you want to get the most value out of these running backs, or just like a rookie running back, wouldn't it make the most sense to kind of save your bullets for next year? You know, like, we know that, yes, Derrick Henry needs an insurance policy. And, you know, yes, Keaton Mitchell's injury history makes it a little bit sketchy, but I think we've seen enough from Derrick Henry to trust that he's going to be able to play like 14 games this year. We've seen enough from Justice Hill to trust that he's going to be a good third down back who can, you know, carry the load. And, you know, we've seen enough from the Ravens to know that they can, you know, do a pretty good job at identifying a guy in the later rounds. So I feel like if I'm Eric DaCosta, I'm taking a running back in the later rounds if I know that he can help me on special teams, not necessarily penciling him in for that running back two, running back three role. I mean, like, would you rather have Trey Benson for 4 years starting this year, but this year he just barely touches the rock because he's behind Derrick Henry, because he's behind Justice Hill? Or do you want to, you know, get another Trey Benson next year where the runway for him getting touches and having an impact and, you know, getting the most out of that 4-year rookie contract is maximized, is more in evidence. So I'm kind of two minds about this, where yes, the Ravens need this depth at this greyhound position where guys tend to break down, but also you have Derrick Henry who doesn't break down. So why take like a third or fourth round pick on a running back who could find just like no pathway to getting touches this year because of the dudes in front of him?
Yeah. And you talk about maximizing that rookie contract, because that's really the runway for all of these running backs. We've seen the second that they get close to their second contract, that's when teams start to lose interest in them. And you want to make sure that you're getting as much from those guys as you can. I do, though, think just because Keaton Mitchell's going to be missing the first part of the season, most likely. And yes, Derrick Henry has been remarkably durable throughout the course of his career, but he is 30 years old. One injury.
But he's going to get in fewer touches because he's playing with a running quarterback in Lamar. You know, he's not going to be getting 200 carries this year.
But fewer touches for the guy that always leads the league in touches. I mean, he still has a ton of tread on his tires. That being said, like if Derrick Henry goes out, that changes the offense, regardless of if they took a third round running back or not. You know, like that third round running back, there's no guarantee that guy's going to be able to step in and make anywhere near the kind of impact that Derrick Henry could make on this team. I think it's just going to be a matter of draft capital. Like if he's going to be a third round pick, I probably wouldn't go with a running back unless somebody like Jonathan Brooks from Texas, who's probably the top running back in this class, if he falls in your lap, I would probably wait because I can, once you get to fourth, five, sixth rounds, yeah, might as well take a shot. Keaton Mitchell was undrafted last year and he ended up being very solid. But this is also a thinner draft class when it comes to those fourth, fifth, sixth round picks. So I don't know. I agree with you, Jonas. It's going to be an interesting tightrope for the Ravens to walk here. I just also do like a lot of these guys. My guy, if I had to stake my claim to one guy, I do like Will Shipley a lot from Clemson because he's so different from Derrick Henry and from what the Ravens have right now in their running back room. I think he's a little bit like a better Justice Hill. He's a good pass catcher, probably not a third down back because he can't really block right now. He's 5'11", 210, rushed for 827 yards last year. Not going to be a workhorse guy, but can catch passes out of the backfield. And maybe we will have an answer finally as to whether it is the scheme or it is the players as to why running backs were not able to catch a lot of passes last year in the Ravens offense. Was it a Todd Monken thing or was it they didn't have a good enough running back to do that? And if they take somebody like Will Shipley, who has shown the ability to catch passes, we will finally get an answer if he flourishes or not in the passing game. All right, Jonas, let's talk about tight ends. You have a rant that you want to go on. What is your boomer take about tight ends?
It's just this year's class. I remember one of my first years on the beat was the offseason that Nick Boyle got re-signed to a 3-year, $21 million deal that made him the 15th highest paid tight end in the NFL. And he was not and never did become a receiving threat. He got that money based purely on his blocking ability. But no one, it seems, in college football is willing to model themselves after the Nick Boyle path to millions of dollars. Like everyone in this NFL, draft class, you read these scouting reports. It's not strong enough to sustain blocks. It's, mainly lined up in the slot, more suited as an F tight end, more suited as a move tight end. Like very few of these tight ends in this class are in the mold of the tight end the Ravens actually need, which is that Nick Boyle inline smash mouth blocker. There's no, ready-made Josh Olivers. There's not even like an Eric Tomlinson who could step in there and make life easier for Mark Andrews, for Isaiah Likely, because those guys are better served as obvious, in obvious receiving positions. So I don't really think there's a whole lot of real estate for the Ravens to kind of navigate here because they already have two similar receivers in Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. They're trying to, put Charlie Kohler in that inline blocking spot. They've, put a little bit more meat on his bones. He's got good length. He's got a good strength, but you've got to be able to actually have the technique to kind of move people off the line of scrimmage. So this would not be a position where it would shock me if the Ravens just come out of this draft and don't get anyone, but I do think it is important that they at least, make a good conscientious effort to find or to develop someone at that blocking position. Because, you look at Detroit and the Lions and what Sam Laporta did as a rookie, a lot of that was made possible because they have this anonymous dude named Brock Wright, who they just, matched a restricted free agent offer to because he plays 50% of their snaps. He's an inline guy and he makes so much of what they do along the line of scrimmage, from the run game to the play action game to the bootlegs possible. And Sam Laporta would not have been the Sam Laporta that, he was as a rookie if not for Brock Wright.
But there is a reason that more fans know who Sam Laporta is and not Brock Wright. So I understand from a collegiate standpoint, yes, you can get paid as a blocking tight end, but as a receiver, that's what catches a lot of teams' eyes and gets you paid more frequently than being just a blocking tight end. But that being said, I think that the Ravens should target somebody who they think is going to be a good blocker. But Jonas, you sent me, what is it, Tip Ryman from Illinois, and it's like 35 seconds on Twitter of just him blocking guys. Even that wasn't that all that impressive. It was like just him pushing a couple guys out of the way, and it was like, whoa, this guy's the best blocking tight end in the draft.
It's interesting. A lot of these blocking tight ends are Midwestern guys. Penn State, Theo Johnson, Minnesota, Brevin Spanford, Kansas State, Ben Sinnott, AJ Barner from Michigan. You mentioned Tip Ryman from Illinois. You mentioned the kind of push pull of, you know, college football and its influence on the NFL. To me, that would be even more incentive to like find a dude at this position who can feast on these linebackers and the defensive ends, because you know, these guys are coming into the league lighter than ever. So there is that opportunity there to find someone who can be a bully at the line of scrimmage, because you're going up against these, you know, inside linebackers who are 230 pounds or these outside linebackers who are 245 pounds. Find a big dude who knows how to move people, and you've got an advantage on every single play. You've got like this stress point for every single defense. Obviously, it's easier said than done. We just talked about how maybe Brevin Spanford is the best blocker in this group. Maybe AJ Barner, maybe it's Tip Ryman. None of those guys, you know, you scour the scouting reports, are like obvious inline, sure thing, day one, you know, impact players. So I think even if the Ravens find who they think is like the best blocking tight end in this group, probably no guarantee that he'd be better than, you know, Mark Andrews, than Charlie Kohler, than Isaiah Likely. And obviously, you know, they have Pat Ricard there, you know, for a reason, right? But this is the last year of his contract and he doesn't really have the length of a tight end. So I don't think it'd be a huge issue if the Ravens just strike out on this group, this offseason, because they have that their, you know, their tight end group is one of the best in the NFL. And, you know, Patrick Ricard does a lot of stuff as a quote unquote tight end, even though he's technically a fullback. So it's going to be interesting to see where they, you know, how they kind of approach the position.
When you're talking about how you want somebody who's tough and who's strong and who's a bully and your dog was barking, I was really hoping you were going to say somebody who's got that dog in him. Just huge missed opportunity there. I think those guys, by the
way, when that dog is invoked and you see it in a quote, should we like just permanently spell it D-A-W-G? Like,
yeah. I think
spiritually, it's not D-O-G, right?
Right. Yeah. Spirit. There's a very clear difference in terms of when you're talking about a dog and when you're talking about a dog. I am the meme of I have the wrong dog in him and it's just a bunch of hot dogs. Yeah. I think those kind of guys, maybe because the league doesn't value them as much, could be found much later in the draft and maybe as undrafted free agents, because those guys are going to slip through the cracks.
Undrafted free agent.
There we go. So we shall see as to whether the Ravens will grab a tight end, a running back, a quarterback in the draft, which is a mere 2 weeks away. Please like, review, subscribe, everything that you can do to promote the Banner Ravens podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. Again, if you write us a good review, I will read it out here on the podcast. That is a guarantee for me, unless there are curse words. Although we do have the explicit tag on podcasts, on Apple Podcasts and everything. So you never know. At @Jonas_Schaefer is Jonas's Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano and also at All Banner Sports. By the way, we do have a baseball podcast as well. In addition to the Adam Jones podcast, we have the Banner Baseball Show, which has been popping off recently with the Jackson Holiday news. Myself and Danielle Allentuck and Andy Koska have been going in on that. But Jonas, you've got some great stuff along with Gianna Han and Kyle Goon about this upcoming NFL draft on the BaltimoreBanner.com, where people can subscribe just $1 for 6 months. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Jonas Schaefer, I'm Paul Mancano, and we'll catch you next time.